All right, everyone, welcome back, and this is the next episode of the Big Bang and Creationism podcast. This show is going to skip over the news because there really wasn't anything in the news this week dealing with creationism and their attempts to get into public school systems across the states. However, we are going to discuss two creationist claims today to kind of make up for that. One of them is going to be discussing the second law of thermodynamics and how it is supposedly in confliction with evolution. It's not really. And then we're going to go into the probability argument that creationists will use, and they'll say the probability of evolution occurring is so low that it's impossible to have occurred. Our science topic for today is going to be a discussion of carbon dating, exactly how the process works, and then we're going to see and answer a little bit of the creationist problems they have with the carbon dating system and why it's actually not a problem. So let's just jump right in into creationist claim number one, that the second law of thermodynamics is in confliction with evolutionary theory. The creationists have a certain special way of interpreting the second law of thermodynamics, and I assume it's because they've read certain creationist books that say what the second law of thermodynamics is according to their version. They say it's that order cannot come from disorder, and they'll cite a car as an example, and they say, look, a car will decay over time, and this is an example of the second law. It's actually not. It's an example of decay and deterioration. That's it. What the second law actually says is that the total entropy of any thermodynamically isolated system tends to increase over time and approaches a maximum value. Now, what entropy is, it's the measure of a system's lack of ability to do work. That is, if you have, say, 10 joules of energy and you use 3 to move around, then 3 joules would be your entropy and the 7 joules is left to be used. Now, just doing bodily functions takes up energy, and so the entropy will increase because you can do less and less work over time if you're in an isolated system where no energy is being added. Now, the creationists tend to forget the part about the thermodynamically isolated system, that is, no energy can get in, because the sun provides us with energy. I did a calculation. I can provide the paper on the website. Every square kilometer on the Earth receives 677 million joules of energy from the sun per second. And the average human being uses 96 joules per second based on a 2,000 calorie diet. So the creationists claim right away there's a hole in it. We are not an isolated system. We receive energy from the sun. So the second law is in no confliction with evolution here. Now, I did receive an email about it listed a paper from trueorigin.com. It's basically a counterpoint to talkorigin.com, which is a website where people go to get creationist claims and see the responses to them. It's a very great site. I suggest we check it out. I have it linked on the website. So they say, they compare, look, we have the energy from a blowtorch, it's thermal energy, but if you blowtorch a plant, obviously it's going to get burned up, and they compare that to the sun. Well, the problem with this is, number one, the sun is not 2 feet away from the plant, and the plant is not meant to harvest flames. It's the sun doesn't put out flames. What it puts out is energy, and the energy from the sun is not in the form of fire. In the form of a kind of plasma and the cosmic rays that come in. And the cosmic rays are the ones that actually reach the planet. And these are easily absorbed by the plants, and there's not a real problem. Just comparing the flames with the energy from the sun shows that the person who made this argument really does not understand the physics behind what he's claiming. So, just the second law thermodynamic argument, if you hear that, now you know how to say that the sun is giving us energy, we are not an isolated system, and that's the part that creationists tend to leave out. So, moving on to our next claim, we get the probability argument. This is a basic rehash of the fine-tuning argument, which states that everything in this universe had to have been fine-tuned in order for us to exist, and so it couldn't have happened naturally. We require an intelligent designer. The probability argument of evolution, they state that evolution, the probability of it occurring is too low by itself. A number came up, if the odds are 1 in 10 to the 60th power, then something is impossible to occur because the odds are so low. I don't really know where the 10 to the 60th came from. People say it, mathematicians have this number for probabilities. I've never heard an actual probability person use it. However, I heard the probability argument from famous old Earth creationist Hugh Ross. I went to see one of his lectures, and he used the probability argument as one and part of his lecture. However, we can use this kind of logic against the creationists and we can demonstrate by their logic that it's impossible to roll a dice, say, 100 times, because the probability of every kind of number you'll come up with is odds of 1 in 10 to the 78th power, which is greater than 1 in 10 to the 60th. So if you roll a dice 100 times, I don't suggest you actually do this, but if you want to, go ahead. Let's say we wanted to get all twos. Now, how do I calculate the probability? The probability is 6 to the negative nth power, where n is the number of times you roll the dice, so it'd be 6 to the negative 100 power. And the number we get is 10 to the negative 78th are 1, and 10 to the negative 10 to the 78th power, which is a gigantic number, and according to creationism, it's an impossible odd to get. And so the odds of getting all, say, all 2s is that number. Well, let's try a different number. All 2s except the last one's going to be a 3 instead. Same odds. And the same for every kind of string of digits that you're going to get when you roll a dice 100 times. And therefore, by creationist logic, it's impossible to roll a dice 100 times because every single number string we'll get is impossibly low, and so we can't roll the dice 100 times. However, they got to think. The odds of getting some string of numbers when you roll the dice 100 times is 100%. You're going to get some string of numbers. If it's just the predetermined amount. If you predetermine a list of numbers and try to get that, then the odds are going to be that low. And the same logic applies to the universe. The odds of something happening in the universe are 100%. The odds that if you predetermined evolution occurring, the odds would be 1 in an infinitesimally small amount. However, the universe didn't predetermine evolution would happen. Just because the odds they say are impossible doesn't mean something won't happen. It means something's predetermined, the odds of that are really low. By the way, guys, if you want to email me, if you think this creationist claim section should be longer, shorter, whatever I should do with it, just give me an email and I'll see what I can do. So let's head on into the science of this podcast. We're going to be discussing carbon dating and how exactly it works. Carbon dating is a process that dates objects that are organic and absorb carbon, like every single living plant and animal. Let's begin with the question of how carbon-14, which is the specific isotope we're going to deal with, how does it get into the Earth's atmosphere? Let's start at the Sun. The Sun is going to put out cosmic rays. And when they peg these atoms, they create a secondary ray, which is in the form of an energetic neutron. And this neutron is going to fly around, and often it'll hit what's known as an N14 atom. It's an isotope of nitrogen. It'll knock loose a proton, and the neutron that was flying around is going to get locked in, and this will change N14 into C14, which is an isotope of carbon. So as we can tell from that, nitrogen isotopes have 7 protons, and carbon isotopes have 6. Now the C14 is taken in plants by photosynthesis, and then the animals get it via the food cycle. So the ratio of C12 and C14, which is C12 is the common carbon and C14 is the radioactive carbon, the ratio is roughly the same in all living animals. And the supply of C14 in the creatures is continually replenished in their body from the sources I mentioned earlier until they die. Now when they die, they stop taking in C14 and C12. And whereas the C14 is going to decay into different elements, the C12 is a stable element and it does not decay. Now C14 takes about 5,730 years to decay back into N14, which is what happened earlier. N14 is a gas, and so when C14 becomes N14, N14 is going to kind of evaporate and leave the fossil, so we'll just have C12 and C14 to compare to one another. The decay of C14 is known as radioactive decay. The specific type of decay is called beta decay. Beta decay is caused by the weak nuclear force that we discussed in the last podcast. This beta decay of neutrons creates a proton, among other things, the other things being the electron and the electron antineutrino. I believe we talked about that earlier as well. They will decay, and so when we have the neutron becoming a proton, we'll have 7 protons back in the carbon that decayed, and it'll turn back into nitrogen, which has the 7 protons we talked about earlier. And so as you can see, it makes perfect sense that C14 is going to decay into N14. Carbon dating dates do not come in the form of AD, BC, or Common Era, before Common Era. They come in the form of before present. Now, the dating system started in 1950, so the before present dates are based off of that. For example, 1900 AD is 50 years away from 1950 AD, and so 1900, if the date of a carbon date was 1900, it would be 50 BP before present. Carbon dating is only useful up to about 52,000 years. What happens here is the carbon C14, the radioactive carbon ratio, the amount in the fossil becomes so low that when you try to carbon date it, comparing the ratios, you get an infinite amount because you'd have, say, 1 of carbon and you divide it by roughly 0% C14 and 1 divided by 0 is going to get you an infinite number. The ratio of C12 to C14 in the atmosphere, not just in the creatures, that take it in, is pretty steady as well. Even with the advent of technology and the atomic bomb, etc., that has thrown off the carbon ratio, fortunately, science scientists already have seen that this effect was going to occur, and they were able to calibrate for the effects of the atomic bomb and the advent of technology that caused the extra carbon to be put in the atmosphere, so there's really no problem there. However, creationists still have some objections to the carbon dating system, and they'll cite certain infamous examples like the seal that was dated to be thousands of years old when it recently died. The problem with the seal example is that creationists do not take into account what's known as the reservoir effect. Now, the reservoir effect is going to cause carbon dating ages, which are going to be called apparent ages because they're obviously incorrect. Now, what happens is that you get carbon that is kind of trapped under the ocean, in this case at least. Carbon was trapped under the ocean, and because it decayed, and the seal that was swimming in this area kind of got this old carbon in it, and so the ratio is going to be thrown off so that you're going to have less C14 than what should be normally in there. And so you're going to get an older date. And this is exactly what happened in the seal example. However, there is a way to correct for this. There are certain regions off the coasts around the world that succumb to this effect. Most of the other complaints by creationists have to do with the other two aforementioned problems, which are human disturbances and the effects of the atomic bombs. As we've already seen, though, scientists have already corrected for that, as well as what happens with the reservoir effect. And so carbon dating is still an accurate and effective method of dating organisms that are organic and within 50,000 years of today's date. This is actually all I have today. I actually got some emails, and I thank everyone for emailing me this week. I got a lot of emails. One of them actually said I should discuss what science is and how exactly creationism does not fit into this picture. I thought that was a great idea, and so look forward to the next podcast being about that. And also, after that, I plan to do one on quantum mechanics, because a lot of what I've been discussing has been about quantum theory, but I've not laid down some kind of ground rule so that everyone knows what quantum theory actually talks about, what it discusses. And so I figured it'd be a great idea to have somewhere to launch into more complex ideas if I started with the basis of quantum theory, and so that's probably going to be the week afterwards. So I basically have everything laid out. I plan to expand the podcast from solely talking about the Big Bang and creationism to discussing evolution as well. I'm actually reading a lot of books on evolution right now, so I can get the basis for the next few podcasts. So I'll be discussing evolution as well. I can really say is I just love getting emails from you guys, hearing what you have to say. I don't really care if you're a creationist and just want to, you know, send me what you think are evidences against evolution. The two I discussed this week, I actually received, they were discussed in an email to me by a creationist. I'd like to commend him for actually listening to the other point of view and trying to show me what he thought were evidences against evolution. If there are any other creationists listening, I'd really love to get some of your emails and see what you have to say. I'd also like to apologize for another short podcast. I know the black hole one was pretty long, but the last two have been about 15 minutes. The next section should be longer. I'm going to do the discussion, like I said before, on the what science actually is, the scientific method, and why creationism doesn't actually fit into that picture. So until then, just get the word out about creationism and why it is not science. And I'll talk to you guys next week.